strong personal belief that before we dive into anything from a project to a ministry, we need to go into it with eyes wide open. We need to understand and prepare for the obstacles that we're going to face. The great thing about obstacles is that they're not permanent. You can always get past them. It may take a leap of faith, patience on the journey around it, or hard work to build a path over it. But obstacles never keep God from working in a ministry. Now, we may be quick to blame obstacles on the devil trying to stop the ministry, but we forget that God will give us obstacles too. He may need to detour us from our agenda and back to his, or slow us down so that we don't rush past his blessings. Or there may be lessons that we need to work through and grow from first. When it comes to ministry, you're going to find obstacles that will come at you from many different directions. We're going to spend the first segment of this topic dissecting the obstacles that are going to come from the church staff, elders, leadership, and from within the women's ministry team. What is the obstacle? What's at the root of that obstacle? And how do we overcome it? This past year, I had an opportunity to sit in on several workshops related to women's ministry. There seemed to be two distinct groups. Group one were the women who wanted a women's ministry program, but their church just didn't think that it was necessary. Or group two, women who had a women's ministry in their church, but it really wasn't being taken seriously. We were given the opportunity to ask a panel of women experienced in women's ministry for guidance. Interestingly enough, over half the panel were part or full-time paid staff members in their church. Their position titles may have varied, but it was best described as women's ministry directors. Yet, these were women who were paid to lead women's ministry. In these churches, having a women's ministry was the same as a youth ministry or children's ministry. Now, most churches will hire a children's pastor or a youth pastor to run those ministries, but how many churches do you know where there's actually a staff member in charge of women's ministry or even men's ministry? So it's time to face the fact. Our first hurdle in women's ministry is going to be right at the top. It's the staff and the elders. And it isn't their fault. Women's ministry has changed over the years. We loosened our grip on deeper ministry purpose and we replaced it with social events and topical speakers. And these aren't bad things. Even youth and children's ministry have fun. Women's ministry, however, lost focus and it really started leaning more towards the fun and fellowship and less about deep scriptural study. It was all about the relationship with each other. And we did this to ourselves and then we wonder why our ministry isn't being taken seriously. To overcome this obstacle, we need to begin by owning the past and committing to change in the future. I'm not suggesting that you should walk into your pastor's office with a 5-year women's ministry plan and a salary request, thus landing yourself a full-time job. What I am suggesting is that this could happen one day, down the road. But first, we need to restore women's ministry back to its original purposes. So the first obstacle is the staff view of women's ministry, and it's rooted in women's ministry shifting focus towards fellowship. And the solution is restoring women's ministry to Christ-centered, gospel-advancing purposes. The next staff view that we need to address is whether or not women's ministry is biblical, and if it is, should women be leading it? There are some church leaders who believe that women should not be in leadership in the church at all. This isn't always relegated to a particular denomination either. And it may not even be a belief of a particular generation. I've seen it in younger pastors and older. It could even be just a geographical demographic. But it is one of the easiest obstacles to overcome because the answer is right in the scriptures. Titus 2 instructs women to teach other women. There are instances in the scriptures where women were influential leaders in their community for God's purposes. For the purposes of this course, we're going to assume that you have little or no support for your ministry. We're really taking you from scratch. So the best way to handle this obstacle is that if you don't have the support, you need to speak with your elder or pastor and share your heart for women's ministry and that you believe that God is calling you to lead it. Let him know where you're reading in the scriptures and saw that there were occasions where women were leading other women. And it wasn't just approved of, but it was encouraged. You can even point him in the direction of the scriptures you found. Ask him to look into the scriptures for himself and to speak with the rest of the staff and then to pray over it. You may even ask if it would be okay for you to check back with him in a couple of weeks or a month to discuss it more. Then let him be and pray about it yourself. Now, if you find yourself in a position where you're not the only woman who's feeling this way, then gather together and pray over it as a group. Then, and this is an important lesson that I learned the hard way, if you get the green light to proceed, take your next step slowly. Start small. Build towards something greater. Don't barge into your pastor's office, Bible at the ready, pointing to scriptures, demanding that the women's ministry has a formal program and paid and all of those things. Because as members of the church, we are to submit to the authority of our pastor over our church. He deserves our respect and how we approach him, and he has an enormous charge upon his shoulders to shepherd the whole church. And that requires our patience over matters like this. So obstacle two is a staff resisting the women's ministry. And it's rooted in geographical, generational, or even personal opinion that women aren't to lead. The solution is a gentle and humble approach to the staff to search the scriptures and pray. So why is it important to have the support of the church staff? Couldn't you just start a women's ministry outside of the church in the community? The best explanation I have ever come across on this, really, it comes from the book Word-Filled Women's Ministry, where Cindy Cochran states, "Organized ministry among women in the local church offers church leadership and the entire congregation a context through which they can affirm how much they value and care for their sisters in Christ. When leadership invests in women's ministry, the church communicates to women that their voices are valued and needed. The purpose and significance of their work is affirmed and the church is strengthened. This strengthening takes place as church leadership actively supports ministry by and among women. Communicating a hands-off attitude by which women are encouraged to do their own thing does not help strengthen women, but it rather leaves them isolated within the church, perhaps cut off and maybe unable to contribute to the church vision and momentum. Every ministry, including women's ministry, is strengthened as pastors and elders are engaged, interested, and ready to guide when needed without being overbearing. That must be what Peter envisioned in his letter. So I exhort the elders among you as fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock." 1 Peter 5:1-3. When the staff supports the women's ministry program and it invests in it, it creates a ripple effect, and it rolls out into the church, into the community, into families, into relationships. That's why it's imperative that these first potential obstacles get our greatest attention. Prayer and patience. We need the staff support. And I just realized, even recently, that we just may be ineffective at communicating that need to them. We have to let the staff know that we don't just want their approval. We want their support. We want their prayers, and we want their investment. And for those who are taking this course and are already on church staff or seeking to be pastors, embrace your women's ministry and encourage it to be more than it has ever been before. Invest in it, and you are investing in your church. The women who are attending women's ministry events, they are your hospitality workers, your Sunday school teachers, and your nursery volunteers. They are leading Bible studies, and they are training our children, and they have great influence over the women in the community. When you invest in their ministry, you are helping to equip them. And when you equip them, the church gets stronger and the message reaches further. Another obstacle that you may or may not face with staff is the subject of budget. Now, you may be blessed with a church that allots budget to your women's ministry each year. However, most women's ministries that I've worked with are self-funded. And what that means is that they raise their own money or they work with no budget at all. This is going to be an area where you're going to have to exercise gentleness, humbleness, and patience. First, you need to look at the big picture. Why are you not getting the funds that you need from your church? If your church is in the middle of a church plant program or a building fund, it's probably not the right time to ask for a budget increase. If your church has some debt and they're actively working to pay that down, again, probably not the best time to ask. Some churches simply believe that some ministries need to be self-sufficient. In the first two scenarios, these are temporary issues. A little bit of patience is really all that is required until the funds are freed up. Keep in mind, though, you are also not the only person who's asking. So in the latter example, the self-sufficient ministry, you may want to speak to the staff about a one-time starting budget just to get the ball rolling. And then the ministry is on its own to replenish those funds. Outside of these scenarios, another hurdle will be requesting budget for the ministry when the staff doesn't see the value. Maybe it's a new ministry in your church, or you have a lot of fellowship but nothing of real substance. If the staff is uncertain about the viability and the impact of the ministry, they may not just hand over the money. Remember that the pastors and staff are accountable to be good stewards with the church's annual budget. This is a time to patiently build up the new ministry or to start making changes into the existing ministry that help prove its value. Later, you can reapproach the elders about adding to the budget. Requests like this should be just that, a request, not a demand. They require patience while the leaders decide. If you do get a no for an answer, don't refrain from respectfully asking for an explanation. You may even ask if you can revisit this with the church leaders before the next year's budget meeting. And consider asking what are the expectations that the church would have of a ministry in order to fund it. Additionally, if the women's ministry is not going to be included in the budget, clarify with the church leadership if your ministry is allowed to use fundraisers, and if so, what restrictions may apply. Until there's a budget line for the women's ministry, accept the fact that this is a volunteer position and determine the best way to fund the ministry. Later, we will go over several ways where you can fund the women's ministry without the church budget. This is another important area to pray over to ensure that the ministry can move forward. So obstacle 3 is the budget, or budget restrictions, or budget droughts. And the root is that the church is accountable to be a good steward of God's money. So the solution is that we need to discuss the options with the church, ask to revisit it annually, and pray for provision. The final obstacle that may present itself when it comes to staff is the church calendar. There will be multiple ministries that want to use the church building or plug their events on the church calendar. You may find that your pastors and elders want to balance that out. They may desire that one ministry doesn't overtake the calendar or monopolize the building. Or you may be in a church that encourages as many activities as it can provide for. Communication is going to help overcome this obstacle. We should never assume anything. So ask from the beginning what kind of restrictions or guidelines are in place for the church calendar. Is there a number of events per month that's maximum? Or define what it looks like so that everybody is basically thinking the same way. The church may be okay with 25 small groups, but they don't want every one of them listed on the weekly calendar, because this may cause important church events to be overlooked. You may have total approval for weekly fellowship meetups, but reserve the promoting for those things on Facebook or email or within small group leaders. The church may give you a restriction of one or two events per month, but the staff defines these events as those ones that require the rearranging of the church or for staff to be present to assist with any needs at the event. I generally find that once you can talk through the expectations, there will be a lot of compromise. And just like with a budget, a ministry that is just starting out or transitioning may need some time to prove themselves. Remember that every time that you use the church and its resources, that does have an expense cost, utilities and materials, or staffing, and you're taking it from someone else. Part of the leadership stewardship is finances, and that includes the use of the building. So obstacle 4 is the church calendar conflicts. The root is that we have many ministries, but one building. The solution is communicating needs, availability, and being open to compromise. The good news is that once you have the green light from the church and you understand the expectations of the ministry from a calendar and budget standpoint, and you've come to terms with those restrictions, you can overcome pretty much any staff objection at that point. Now, there are situational conflicts that can occur, but I find them to be very rare with staff members. They're usually much more prevalent within the actual women's ministry team. And here's a few reasons why. One, there's leadership struggles. And these can show up for various reasons. When we create a team, especially in women's ministry, we tend to have a group of leaders. Perhaps one woman is designated to coordinating the Bible studies, while another one plans the social events. Instead of a single leader delegating work to a team, we find a team of leaders with their own responsibilities, all vying for the same space and time. And this can create competition for time and resources, not just in the leadership meetings, but in the ministry itself. Or if pride gets in the way, we can have power struggles for position within leadership. Even the disciples wanted to know who Jesus favored. It's a human flaw. The head of the ministry will need to be on the watch out for these struggles, when they arise, how to handle them, and quickly. However, I find that they can be prevented by structured and organized meetings and ministry teams, and we're going to discuss this more in future segments. Second, personality conflicts can create situational problems, which is when the women's ministry team is first put together, it's usually made up of women who are already acquainted with each other, so they've got an established relationship. But over time, group dynamics change. People step down to work in other ministries, they move, their work schedules change, and as we begin to plug new women into the team, during this time of transition, personality conflicts are going to arise. And a great way to help ease this transition is making sure to schedule in team building and bonding activities, particularly when there's going to be a shift in the group. Members need to spend some time getting to know each other on a personal level. But if there are unresolved conflicts, as the leader, you may need to counsel the women to put aside their differences for the sake of the team or elect to leave the team altogether. I always suggest speaking with a church elder or pastor before you do that. Make that kind of a move. They may have important insight into personal struggles or past conflicts that you're not privy to, and your church leaders will advise you on how to handle it. They will support your decision, or they actually might ask you to let them deal with it directly. Another situational is agenda conflicts. As the face of women's ministry changes, agenda conflicts are going to be on the rise. Women who've been engaged in the older fellowship model, they're not going to be as necessarily interested in changing. New members might be looking for a strong discipleship program and deeper Bible studies, and there's going to be a conflict there. This is something bigger than just a personality conflict or even a leadership struggle, because it's often accompanied by those words, "God really laid it on my heart that we should," or "I really feel that God is pulling the ministry in this direction." How do you argue with God? Well, the best way to combat those types of agenda conflicts is to make sure that your women's ministry is first and foremost supporting the overall ministry of the church. God has given your pastor a very specific vision, and all ministries within the church should support that vision through their programs and their activities. The women's ministry, or any sub-ministry for that matter, should not have its own vision independent of the church's. So when someone starts trying to move the vision towards their own personal agenda or their own belief or opinion, as a leader, you can rein it in by asking the person, "Well, how does this fit within the church's vision?" They'll usually put a squash to it. The fourth situational is what I call the pedestal. And at the head of every ministry, it's easy to forget that the ministry doesn't belong to us personally, but that it's God. And if we do forget this, we can end up putting ourselves or allow others to put us on top of a pedestal. And when this happens, we become an obstacle to the ministry ourselves. We are now getting in our own way. And this can be a double-edged conflict if the previous ministry leader is still serving on the team in another capacity. Team members may be holding her on a pedestal that new leader can't compete with. Nothing you do will ever be good enough, and it doesn't really matter who is on the pedestal. It still becomes a hindrance to the team and the ministry, and it's got to be dealt with. It might require a bit of humbling and stepping down from the position of authority. It might be admitting this to your team and asking them to hold you accountable. And if you're in a situation as a new leader dealing with the previous leader's legacy, you might have to involve your overseeing pastor or elder to help mediate the situation. The goal for the team should be unified, working together for the good of the body. If we're allowing personal conflicts to interfere with the team, it's going to impact the ministry as a whole. Unresolved conflict in a ministry team can be a valid reason to disassemble the entire team and start fresh, or even put an end to the ministry completely. So if we're vigilant about putting others first and getting out of our own way, a strong team is going to emerge. And we're going to discuss this more in depth in the future. But in our next segment, we're going to explore some of the obstacles that you are going to face within the church body and the community.